In 1945, the Dentai family fled Budapest, Hungary, to escape the final throes of World War II. They spent that Christmas season living in a train car, struggling to find food and stay warm, until a kind American soldier named Philip brought help. 43 years later, the family was eager to find their lost friend.
Join me. You may be able to help solve a mystery.
Hello. Welcome to You Solved a Mystery,
a podcast where we delve into segments of the iconic unsolved mysteries that have been solved and reveal the final chapter.
I'm Chandra.
And I'm Athena. And it's nice to be back in the closet with you, Chandra.
It's nice to be here, Athena. Well, it's nice to be with you, Athena. I hate the closet.
This is a very stuffy closet. Yeah. It's a big-ish closet. It's a weird closet. It's under the stairs. It's weirdly shaped. And it's very stuffy.
Athena brought ice packs into the closet for me because I always get way too hot in the closet. So now I have ice packs. It's great.
I'll do my best. So today I have another Lost Loves episode to share. This episode originally aired on December 21st, 1988, and you can find it on YouTube as Season 1, Episode 12. In May of 1945, as Nazi Germany crumbled and the Allies took control, Karl and Teresa Dentai fled from the danger in Budapest with their 5-year-old daughter, Brigida, as the Red Army moved in. I thought the history of this episode was really interesting. It originally aired in the 80s, of course, and in the middle of the Cold War. So they describe the Red Army as the vengeful Red Army, kind of glazing over the fact that Russians were U.S. allies during World War II.
Yeah, but it's also really interesting to think about what they're doing now.
It's extremely relevant. And I told you, the night I finished writing this episode was the day before Russia attacked Ukraine.
Based on how Unsolved Mysteries is presenting the story, they're like, Russia is rolling into Budapest and they have to flee the danger
of communism. Think,
what is Russia doing in Budapest? Were they actually invading Budapest?
Yeah. I mean, they were taking over Budapest to take control away from the Nazis, but they wound up being colonizers of Budapest. And it was a long, long time before Budapest could get some more independence.
Way to go, Russia. That's how you do things wrong.
Yeah, so it's like, no, the Dentai family wasn't fleeing evil communism. They were fleeing a very violent war in the middle of Hungary, but
also colonizers.
Also, Russia needs to stop, as does the U.S.
This is true. All colonizers need to cut that shit out. But Russia, come on. You look so bad right now.
May this be the end of... I'm scared to finish that sentence because if somehow he happens to listen to this one obscure podcast and hears me say something, I don't know what that man's going to do to me.
I heard that Russian oligarchs have put hits out on him. The same people who put him in power now find him to be inconvenient.
Really?
And are trying to have him taken out.
That's interesting.
And I heard this from someone who reads a lot of news, particularly...
like the Russian Times?
Yeah.
Is where he used to get a lot
he
of
reads
news.
The Russian Times. Uh-huh. I shouldn't say particularly, though, because there are a lot of different news sources, including the Russian Times. For a long time, just to sort of get the Russian perspective on things. I don't know, he's doing a political science master's program now. I don't get it, but anywho, Lost Loves.
Yeah, so it's just wild that then in the segment when Karl Dentai says something like, it's a strange feeling leaving the home where you've always been, and then you think of all the Ukrainian refugees fleeing. And people are fleeing Russia also because they don't agree with what's happening and they're afraid of being arrested or killed for protesting. Yeah.
Apparently, there have also been people who have been going and trying to help animals, like people related in animal rescues and stuff like that. And in the process of trying to bring them food, multiple animal rescuers have been killed by Russian military, like people who were just in their car driving food to animals.
They're targeting civilians.
The Russians opened fire on them.
It's monstrous.
It just highlights how horrifying what they're doing is, because it doesn't matter who is at the other end of their weapon. Not that it's okay if they're shooting at people in the Ukrainian military, because Russia has no business being there. Anywho, I feel like we're getting off the rails here.
What is it? Russian warship, go fuck yourself? Pretty sure that's what they said on Snake Island.
Oh.
But going back to Hungary and this story, by painting it more like people in Hungary were fleeing communism, they paint over the fact that Hungary was actually an Axis ally.
Oh dear. Oh no.
They had, even before the war, pretty significant anti-Semitic policies in their country. Although they had made an effort to reach an armistice with the USSR in 1944, Germany kidnapped the regent's son and would only return him if he revoked the armistice. According to Wikipedia, although most Jews in Hungary were protected from deportation to the German extermination camps for the first few years of the war, like I said, they had long been subjected to anti-Jewish laws that limited Jewish participation in Hungary's public and economic life, including forced hard labor.
So Hitler is still the big bad, but Hungary, you're not looking so good.
Mm-mm. In 1939, the forced labor service system was introduced in Hungary, affecting primarily the Jewish population, but also other minorities, like sectarians, leftists, and Roma.
And yeah, I didn't think I liked the sound of the forced labor
service system.
Yeah.
So under the system, 35,000 to 40,000 people from those groups were forced to serve in the Hungarian Second Army. So they were fighting the Allies, who theoretically were coming to save these kinds of people. And 80% of them died either on the battlefield or in captivity. Then, once Germany came in and actually occupied Hungary in 1944, Jews and Roma started being deported to the Auschwitz concentration camp.
Why do people gotta suck so much?
Yeah. That year, 6,000 Jewish forced laborers working in copper mines were forced into death marches, with half being executed or dying from beatings or exhaustion before they even arrived at the execution camps. Hungarian soldiers were among those overseeing these marches. By the end of the war, the death toll was between 450 and 606,000 Hungarian Jews and an estimated 28,000 Hungarian Roma. About 300,000 Hungarian soldiers died during World War II, and more than 600,000 civilians, including the Jewish and the Roma people who were executed. So you have to think of civilians, the majority who died were people who were killed by the Axis powers. And what we'll come back to now is that a lot of the fighting in Hungary happened in the capital of Budapest, which is where the Dentais live. Hence, as the Red Army is rolling in to end the war because Germany is falling, the Dentais flee. I tried to find more background on the Dentais' own beliefs because I'm like that, and I didn't find anything. And it's not the point of this particular story, but I'll seize the opportunity to quote Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel. Quote, "We must take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. Sometimes we must interfere. When human lives are endangered, when human dignity is in jeopardy, national borders and sensitivities become irrelevant. Wherever men and women are persecuted because of their race, religion, or political views, that place must, at that moment, become the center of the universe." End quote. So with all that heavy shit out of the way,
just let that marinate for a moment.
the Dent Eyes fleeing massive violence and turmoil in their home of Budapest were now refugees of war, fleeing the only home they ever knew. And I have the quote of what Carl said. It's, quote, "It's a very strange feeling when you leave a country where you was born. But thousand family was leaving. Just leave everything behind. Just running away." End quote. Very reminiscent of what you're seeing over in Ukraine. The Dentais found shelter in an abandoned train car surrounded by other refugee families in Linz, an American-occupied rural area of Austria. It was a hard life, cold, and food was scarce. Carl gets emotional in the segment when he says how, despite having nothing, no clothes, no food, and nowhere to go, the family never complained. A few days before Christmas, an army private named Philip came to visit the family in their train car. He had met 5-year-old Brigida at her American-run school, and by talking to her, he learned that her family was having a hard time. Despite the language barrier, and in a rather cringe-worthy reenactment, Christmas, you know, ho ho ho, he managed to ask if he could take Brigida to a Christmas party that they were holding for the refugee children. The Dentais were excited for Brigida to do something fun. They managed to scavenge some material and Teresa made Brigida a party dress. Brigida had never been to a Christmas party before. Carl said, quote, "This was a biggie for us, knowing how happy she would be," end quote. Over 40 years later, as she spoke to Unsolved Mysteries, Brigida remembered that night like it was yesterday. She remembered thinking of Philip as a Prince Charming taking her to a ball. She remembered feeling safe and happy. She felt like a princess, and someone had opened a magic door. There were lights and music and fancy food unlike she'd ever seen. The kindness showed by Philip that night returned some of the Dentais' faith in the human race, and they were happy to see their daughter so happy when she returned and started opening presents while the three adults watched, talked, and drank wine Philip had brought. He brought some joy to their difficult lives. They laughed a lot together, even though they didn't share a language. They expected that night to be the end of it, but Philip came back. He brought candy for the refugee children and food for the families. He brought cigarettes and played chess with the Dentais. As Unsolved Mysteries put it, he offered, quote, "friendship when they had few friends, food when there was often hunger, and faith when despair seemed insurmountable," end quote.
It reminded me of an episode of MASH where BJ starts taking care of a family of Korean refugees. And he becomes very involved and dedicated to the family. And it's also in a situation where there's really no security.
And the family has to move on because shelling is coming their direction. And then he never gets to know what happened to them. MASH is a great show. Watch it.
It also has some problematic aspects, which we can't gloss over, but also I think I've watched it at least 200 times all the way through in my life.
Yeah, and everything's a little problematic, so.
The name of the episode is BJ Papa-san.
Oh.
San is Japanese.
Ooh.
Moving on.
I'll sit with that later. After just 5 months, Philip's troop was transferred to France. But he left the Dentais his address and a photograph, and a duffel bag packed with supplies.
If Germany was falling at this point, why were they going to France? I don't actually expect you to have an answer for that.
Just, I don't know.
I just feel like they, you know, this makes me think of MASH as well, because Colonel Potter was a young soldier who lied about his age, stationed in France and
had claimed, big thighs for a boy.
Yeah. Something about a porta potty breaking away and rolling after them, and it turned out to be a joke, and something about eating a horse.
What are you doing, Joanna?
I can't help it. I've just
consumed too much MASH.
Yes. My brain is just, it's full of MASH, and that's why I don't understand chemistry.
All the science was taken up with MASH instead.
Not all the science. Excuse me.
No, she has a bachelor's in science. Okay.
I just, chemistry is hard for me.
Yeah, it's fair.
Okay, back to the story.
So even though it had only been 5 months that the family had known Philip, they felt like he had become family. The Dentists spent the next 11 years raising money to immigrate to the United States. They were more hard years, including 3 weeks when Carl was jailed in Belgium. Once they made it to America in 1955, they attempted to find Philip with only the aid of his first name and the photograph that he had given them, as they had lost his address over the many years of migrating from one country to another.
It's said that they had lost most of their possessions, and I'm just like, I mean, I don't know if that happened all at once or over time, but I just can't imagine when you already don't really have much at all, losing all of your possessions at once. That would just be such a kick in the pants.
Yeah, I don't know when or why exactly he was arrested in Belgium, but some of the sources I read said that the whole family was arrested in Belgium, and then Carl spent 3 weeks in prison. So, like, trying to hang on to anything when you have that kind of thing happening. I don't know why they were arrested, but it might have been an undocumented immigration kind of thing. For years after settling down in the United States, Carl placed advertisements in newspapers in order to try to find Philip, but up until the time of broadcast, they had been unsuccessful. Tragically, Teresa passed away in 1959, only 4 years after they finally arrived in America. But Carl and Brigida still thought fondly of Philip.
It's a family memory, something that they can all remember as a light in the darkness, where they had their whole family there.
Mm-hmm.
I would cling to such a thing.
Yeah. It was after watching episodes of Unsolved Mysteries that successfully identified other lost loves that Carl thought to reach out to see if Unsolved Mysteries would consider them for a segment. Within hours of the original broadcast, Pauline Dauphy called the 800 number from Maine to tell them that Philip was her cousin, Philip Peltier. Philip was a retired postal worker now, married with 5 children, living in Hammond, Indiana, just 5 hours from where Carl owned a hotel in Sheboygan, Michigan.
So, but isn't Colonel Blake from Indiana?
She's still on MASH, folks.
He can't talk about the military and not have me go there.
Philip was 19 years old the winter he helped the Dentists, and 63 when they finally reunited.
Wow.
That's about 44 years.
That's really sweet, though. That's a long time to remember the impact that he had on their family.
Mm-hmm.
He done good.
Philip told Unsolved Mysteries that his sister had excitedly called the hotline, then him. So I think maybe multiple people called the hotline.
Called the hotline and then him.
That's my brother.
I need you to know that I know who this person is. I'm so excited. Oh my God, Philip.
I thought this was interesting. He was carefully questioned by Unsolved Mysteries producers with questions intended to trip up an imposter before they were willing to contact Carl and Brigida.
Unsolved Mysteries takes these things very seriously.
And then they wouldn't actually let them speak until the predetermined, televised, recorded meeting that they set up with them. But you know what? That's okay. You did a lot of good work. It was just a few weeks later, on December 28, 1988, that Carl and Brigida visited Philip at his home. Many of Philip's family members were also there, including his wife, Lucille. They embraced like long-lost family, both parties feeling like it was a dream. Quote, "My God, after 43 years, who would believe it?" Philip said. His wife was recorded saying, quote, "You're so excited, you've got stars in your eyes," end quote. Philip told Unsolved Mysteries he also thought of the Dentists over the years, but there was just no way to tell where they were.
They were living in a boxcar when he knew them. There's just literally no way. Mm-hmm. You can't write a letter to a boxcar.
And you can't Google Dentists and see what pops up, because there's no Google. There's no internet. Carl said it was like another Christmas miracle to find someone he didn't know if he'd ever see again. Because it was December 21st when it aired.
It's a Christmas miracle episode.
Seeing Philip brought the happiness of the Christmas party back to Brigida. She said it felt like they had never lost touch. They spent that afternoon looking at photographs and catching up, and Carl said they would stay in touch and visit as much as possible, saying, quote, "It's a friendship forever," end quote. Carl told Philippe, quote, "It was a miracle to find someone like you in such a place," end quote. In 1990, Carl wrote a book about his experience of World War II and emigrating to the United States called Memoirs of an Immigrant. It's out of print, unfortunately.
Dabnabbit!
I would have tried to read it, maybe to get more of his idea of the political side, plus, you know, just so much good information about him. But Carl passed away in 2000, Philip passed away in 2001, and sadly, Brigida died in 2004, so she was pretty young.
But, that's such a bummer.
But they stayed in touch for the rest of the time that they had. There were a couple funny things that I found while I was doing research for this that I thought I might share. They're kind of amusing. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah.
So while trying to find out why they might have been arrested in Belgium, I came across a 2020 article about a far-right anti-LGBT Belgium MEP who resigned after being caught at an all-male sex party during Belgium's COVID lockdown.
Friggin' hypocrite.
He climbed out a window and ran along a gutter, but was caught before he could escape, and narcotics were found in his backpack.
Friggin' hypocrite!
A source in the European Parliament said, quote, "There's nothing wrong to participate in a sex party of any kind."
Yeah! Truth.
However, such kinds of meetings with many people are illegal under the coronavirus laws.
Okay.
The fact of being covered by parliamentary immunity does not exempt anyone from obeying the law, end quote. And I just loved it. It's like, yeah, have sex parties, but it's COVID.
Maybe don't spread a virus.
And then there's just that, yeah, that hypocrisy.
Practice safe sex.
Including COVID. But yeah, the hypocrisy that he's an anti-LGBT person at an all-male sex party.
That internalized homophobia will really get you.
Yep, sure will.
It's okay.
Live your life.
It's okay to be gay.
Also, this is bananas. A blog called Mystic Investigations had a post about, quote, "The World War II Christmas Miracle," where they said, quote, "Philippe Peltier was in an elite, enchanted group of humans considered human elves by the demi-angel Santa Claus himself."
All of these years of life, and I didn't know that Santa was an angel.
He's a demi-angel. And they were serious about this. The post continued, quote, "After he died in 2001, Philip's spirit awoke in North Pole City with the option to be resurrected there to live as an immortal or move on to the afterlife."
How do they know?
And then they said that after spending 17 years as one of Santa's angel elves, he decided to move on to heaven.
How do they know this?
And, quote, "During a saintly ascension ceremony, Santa Claus sent Philip to heaven," end quote. But he continues to visit the North Pole every Christmas.
So were they there at the ceremony? Is that what I'm picking up here?
I don't know what to tell you, Chandra, but I thought I'd found another source on a story that was pretty difficult to research. can you imagine my face as I read?
It's just, it's so out there. Like you just said, it's a story that's difficult to research. So that means there's not a lot of information about it out there. And then apparently at some point there was just enough information for somebody to latch onto it as the story of a demi-angel who has gone on to the afterlife after working for Santa.
An elite enchanted group of humans considered human elves by the demi-angel Santa Claus.
It's wild. Humans are wild.
I think that someone's like, just... oh, wouldn't that be a cool idea if he lived on as a Christmas miracle forever? And then they just wrote it down. And, like, they don't understand the difference between fact and fiction. That is the story of the Dentais and Philippe Peltier.
Philippe sounds like he was a really swell guy, mm-hmm. no matter what the Dentais politics were.
Mm-hmm. And human beings are human beings at the end of the day. And I think if people are treated with more compassion and care overall, there could be fewer conflicts between people for things like race, politics, and religion.
And I'm just going to tell myself that because they ultimately ended up in the United States, that means that they agreed with the position of the allies.
In line with the allies. Yes, that is also what I choose to believe.
And this is a lovely story of people escaping Nazis and fighting Nazis and coming together and warming hearts.
For all I know, they were Jewish. I don't think they were Jewish. But I don't know, they weren't Jewish. I don't think they were Jewish. Never mind.
But the moral of the story is don't be anti-Semitic and be a good person.
Yeah. One person can make a huge difference in another person's life.
That's a much better moral of the story.
It's important to remember because sometimes we feel, speak for myself, sometimes I feel like I can't make a difference, like I can't do enough, like everything's insurmountable, but a small effort can make a big difference. You just have to be willing to take the effort.
All I have are faces. I don't have words.
Would that this hoodie were a time hoodie? Okay, we're going to get out of the closet before Chandra has a full breakdown.
Thank you for joining us.
You can find us on Instagram at YouSolvedAMystery. You can email us at YouSolvedAMystery@gmail.com. We've had some really nice messages from people, but I'm awful about responding. I'm so sorry my social anxiety makes me an asshole, but I've read your messages. Thank you so much. I'm going to try to be better about things because I do appreciate it.
Please hang in with us while we try to figure out how to be podcasters and humans.
Functional humans. That's the goal.
That's the dream.
And join us next time for You Solved a Mystery.